Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's like the Good Friday vibe. Is that this song sets the tone for the weekend. I'm thinking about how this could like perfectly walk us right into All-Star Weekend, where it's nothing but vibe, nothing but partying for the NHL players this weekend. They're going to be playing this song.
The players, the media. I've seen your Instagram posts.
The media right now. Everyone is busting out. Like, how many people had to go to storage to get the summer vibe shirts out?
Oh, yeah. Little party shirts. Yeah.
The Kenny Flowers.
Let me get one. Let me get the one with the little cocktails on it. Yeah, oh, yeah. That's a fun shirt.
That's flirty.
Everybody there going, is it? Let me get my, fun shirts out.
Yeah. The fun shirts are out. Everyone's getting burnt to a crisp.
I was going to say SPF 50 or above for that crowd. Yeah. The pastiest group of people I've ever seen was during the World Cup this year. They put the Welsh supporters section directly in the sun in Qatar. I don't know why they would do that to those men. That's the most sunburned group of people I've ever seen in my life. I have a feeling also on that Mount Rushmore is the entire media conglomerate in whatever part of Florida they're in.
We have Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer for ESPN, on the line. Is that true, Greg? Is the sunburn per 60 just off the charts at this moment?
I can't speak for anybody else. I can only speak for myself, and I have to say yes. I've been outside twice here to cover like a golf event thing, and then go to the Fan Fest yesterday. The golf event thing was at like 4 p.m.
Hot,
and so I felt pretty good about life. Like I didn't get burned. It was like good. And then like I spent 6 hours at the Fan Fest yesterday, and came back and was the kind of sunburn that's noticeable. And also, so the greatest thing about it is that I'm going to be on Daily Wager today before the skills competition on ESPN2. And I told them, I said, look, I'm more than happy to come on. Just be wary of the fact that I do have a pretty noticeable sunburn. And then they said, that's great.
Great.
So I guess,
love it.
I guess my irresponsibility at applying suntan lotion is now content for my network. So that's good.
Everything is.
I don't deal well with heat at all. Like just doing like doing a job in the summertime is like an issue for me. So I can't imagine that it's not a wrench being thrown at a bunch of hockey reporters. Now I went to one All-Star game. It was in San Jose, and it was like it was cool and it was just beautiful. It was like I thought it might be really hot, but it wasn't. I think sunrise is a completely different ball game. Now you said you were at the golf event, and these things are pre-taped, right? So you know how the golf event went.
I do, yeah.
Not that we're obviously not asking for spoilers, but like I want to ask you about the novelty items, the new items. Is there anything, and I guess you can leave out the golf event because no spoilers, but there's something novelty-wise at the All-Star Game in Florida this year that has particularly caught your eye?
Well, it's like it's not a secret, like either of these events. I mean, the funny thing about both of them is that the general public was at the golf event. It wasn't the general public. There was Panther season ticket holders and then some people at the club. And then yesterday at the Dunk Tank event, there was like 1,600 people there. So it's the funniest juxtaposition of priorities where they allow the media to come to cover these things. They're like, you're under strict embargo not to talk about it or write about it until this thing airs. And meanwhile, you got a bunch of yokels with their phones out filming the entire thing. And I'm surprised that like the entire event hasn't already hit, TikTok. But so I will say that both of those events are really cool. I love the innovation from Steve Mayer of the NHL and the rest of his group to tailor some of the skills competitions to the locality where the All-Star Game is being held. Like we saw the Vegas Strip stuff, obviously golf and water are both synonymous with Florida. So both events, I could tell you, went off really well. The boys were very much into both of them. There's going to be some laughs. There's obviously like part of it. All these guys are mic'd up. I'm looking forward to seeing how they put them together because watching them in real time, you could tell that they had some really cool stuff happen during these events.
Well, and that's one of the things of like, it's almost like a dirty thing in our business because, you know, this was before my time, but it's like all we ever wanted was the stuff on TV. Like you always hear about these stories of, oh, the tape delay finals in the, you know, the more for NBA and that type of thing. But the idea of prepackaging this and making it the best it can be, you know, I think back to some of the Bellagio stuff and it was there, there are always these cool ideas, but when you try to do it live, you're just going to have these little lulls. hotels. And so the idea of prepackaging it ahead of time, I think, makes it only more entertaining. You know, you mentioned the personalities there, and I think that's always a interesting thing when we talk about growing the game or selling the game or allowing people to, you know, realize who these guys are. Do you think it's a cognizant effort NHL players are making to come out of their shells more? Do you think it's just a new generation of players? Do you think it's all overstated and they haven't come out of their shells all that much? You know, what do you think is happening with the NHL in terms of, you know, trying to have more engaging personalities? Because it feels like even the idea of like a real villain in the sport, like, I guess that's Brad Marchand by default, but it's like, I don't know, he's like a C-plus villain at best. We could do better, I feel like. How do you feel the NHL is doing in terms of, you know, personalities and growing the game in that regard?
Well, he's only a villain in Toronto.
Yeah, okay, like, this is true.
And
Greg, even here, we're like, oh, that dastardly villain. But you have to respect him, and you would kill for him on your team. Like, yeah, it's like, even that is how we talk about the villain.
Without question. I will say, by the way, on the pre-tape versus live thing, I wrote about this morning in our roundtable on ESPN about the All-Star game. It's kind of like the Saturday Night Live debate, where, you know, when you watch SNL, the sketches are always like fun because they're dangerous and chaotic. But at the same time, like, the pre-taped commercial parodies are like
amazing,
not in keeping with the spirit of the show, but they're always the best. Mm-hmm. Like, they're always hilarious. And you have to kind of like excuse the fact that they're not live. From the personality perspective, I think a couple things have happened with the All-Star game over the years. They've gotten better with selecting players that want to be here and not being sticklers about guys that don't want to be here. And by that, I mean, sometimes we are tasked with talking about all-star snubs, you know, guys that didn't get selected. And it's tricky because, you know, behind the scenes, you have guys that simply don't want to go. Maybe they went last year. Maybe they've got something cooking with their family during the break. Maybe they're just like old. Like, there's a number of guys that communicate to their teams, hey, not this year. And then the NHL acquiesces and says, that's fine. You know, you didn't like get selected and then bag out, so we have to suspend you. You just said not this time, and that's fine. So they've been getting better with not forcing guys to do this thing if they don't want to do it. And that's helped. The other thing that's helped is that it's a younger league. So there's a novelty to having, you know, Jack Hughes there for the first time last year. There's a novelty to having some of the players that we have this year for the first time. Like, it's an energy that they bring to the skills competition, to the game itself, and to the proceedings, because they're not jaded by any of this. And I think that's really helped sort of push this event forward a little bit. Is literally, you need to have people buying into it. And I think that they've done a much better job of cultivating a group of players that do buy into it. And by the way, like, one of those players is Sidney Crosby, which is amazing to me. Sid did the dunk tank thing. Sid and Ovechkin are partnering on the breakaway challenge tonight. I don't know what's happened where, you guys remember, like, back in the day, the story of Sidney Crosby in the All-Star game was, what excuse will he come up with not to show up? Mm-hmm. Like, he was notorious for skipping this thing, but now he's 36, you know, now he's done this a lot. And now all of a sudden, like he is the guy who went to the NHL and said, I want to be in the dunk tank thing. And that is mind blowing to think about a player of that magnitude and fame and influence at his age being like, yeah, let's have some fun. But that's Sid. I mean, that's where he is at this stage of his career.
So I wanted to ask you about Crosby and Ovechkin teaming up for the NHL breakaway challenge. Like, a part of me, like, it hurts me a little bit. Like, I kind of, like, a lot of my hockey fandom was like, Sid versus Ovi. Like, this is what I get fired up about. This is the most important thing. This rivalry is the NHL. Now they're just like, now they both won cups.
Yeah, and we're all old now.
Fat and happy. And now they're just teaming up. Like, are you okay with Sid and Ovi being cool?
Yeah, it's jarring. It reminds me of when I was a kid and Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Cheek were caught in a car with drugs on the New Jersey Turnpike, and you're like, how can that happen? You're mortal enemies. One of you is the American hero, and the other one is the Iranian bad guy. It makes no sense. It crushes your preconceptions. No, the thing about Ovi and Sid that's been
great.
It would be slightly
more jarring if Ovi and Crosby got caught in that exact scenario. That would be slightly more jarring, yeah.
You're completely right. I think what's cool about them is that, like, over the years at the All-Star game, they've definitely developed a friendship. You know, you see them sitting together on the boards, you know, observing all of the youngins as they're doing their skills competitions. I think that the intensity and the animosity of their relationship has diminished over time as they've gotten older. And specifically, and I ran this past somebody the other day who knows Ovechkin a little bit, like, I think specifically the Capitals winning the Cup really went a long way towards, like, thawing this relationship. You know, there was always this incredible imbalance between the two, where Ovechkin had the statistical achievement. I mean, Crosby, no slouch, but obviously Ovi is en route to breaking one of the greatest records in sports history. And then Crosby had all of the team success. And so, like, when Ovechkin and the Caps won the Cup and, by the way, defeated the Penguins en route to that Cup, I think it really kind of, like, allowed both of them to relax a little bit. And ever since then, they've sort of been, I think, a little bit more cordial. Like, they exchange texts and stuff. Like, it's been a very different relationship, and it's been really cool to see. You know, it's like, you know, these guys defined a generation of hockey for us, and it'd be a shame if they really did, like, hate each other.
So how do you think that functioned? Was it like Ovi could kind of relax once he won? Was it like Sid sending a congratulatory text? Like, how do you, like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, we both won, we've both done it. But the how that functioned, how they came together, was it just, you know, they looked aside at one of each other, looked over their shoulder, and they were hanging out at the All-Star game without really knowing? Like, what exactly do you think went into that? And, I, you know, that's a story worth telling, I guess.
I think in Ovi's case, like, you know, winning the Cup really did, you know, decrease pressure in a lot of ways in his life. You know, that was always the thing that they were chasing and unable to accomplish. And you know, not only that, but, I mean, you have to remember also within the context of the Penguins-Capitals rivalry, they couldn't get one over on the Penguins either, like, for years and years and years. So it's, I just think those two things combined really allowed him to relax a little bit more. I mean, again, like, let's not forget the level of catharsis we were dealing with Ovechkin, where he's making snow angels and public fountains in Washington, D.C. because he's so happy that they won the Stanley Cup. Like, it's that level of joy. But as far as their relationship goes, I just think that's a function of age. You know, like, at some point in your life, you start to think about, okay, how many people really understand my plight? How many people really understand my life and what I've gone through? And those are people that you value because you can talk to them. You have shared experiences. And how many people have been Sidney Crosby? How many people have been Alex Ovechkin? Probably only Alex Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby. Like this is like Magic and Bird. Like, these are two people that have had an incredible experience and are in such rarefied air as athletes within their sport that there's very few people that they can probably relate to, but except for each other. So, I mean, it's natural that sort of bond is going to develop over time. And plus, just out of repetition, I mean, these guys have been in each other's world since 2005, right? So, I mean, that's a pretty long run to be synonymous with somebody else. And I think it's just going to be a natural function of that to eventually form some sort of bond.
My fanfic version of this will be Gino Malkin playing a peacemaker between the two of them. But yeah, I completely agree with everything you're saying there. The idea of it's only natural that eventually they would drift together as opposed to apart. Apparently, we've lost Greg Wyshynski. I was about to make a.
I heard that sound. I was like, did I just hear the drop call sound?
Did you hear the dunk sound?
Yeah. The dunk.
So just
like
in what we've been talking about the NHL and the idea of, you know, the next step forward is it feels like that's what's missing, right? Is there has been no rivalry individually after those guys. You have team rivalries, of course, and Boston's gone on a great run, and, you know, Tampa and Florida, you thought, hey, these two great teams in the Atlantic, and they had the one series, and it's never really amounted to much of anything. You know, from a league perspective, you know what they would want it to be, and it'd be McDavid and Matthews. I guess the problem is they're both in Canada. We have Greg Wyshynski back, so I'll just ask him about that. Greg, I was thinking about the idea of, okay, so you've had Crosby and Ovechkin. It's been this great rivalry. The fact that they can play each other in the playoffs pretty much every year only helps kind of, you know, shoehorn it along. But is that what the NHL's missing, is kind of the next one of these? You know, we would take a team-based rivalry. We all loved Red Wings and Avalanche in the 90s, and, you know, we've seen the next iteration of that with a individual one in Crosby and Ovechkin. You know, do you think the league is kind of lacking that? It's marquee rivalry, be that team-based or individual.
Yeah, no, God, yeah, rivalries are not in a very good place right now in this league. I mean, for a while, they were trying to manufacture them. I mean, I don't know if you know, but here in the States, when NBC had the contract for the NHL, they'd have rivalry night, every Wednesday night. And sometimes rivalry night would be like the Bruins and the Wild. And you're like, what is that even? That's not a rivalry, you know? So they've tried to grow them. And so, you know, maybe part of it is the playoff format. Maybe part of it is the way that the game has changed, and we're having a hard time defining what a rivalry is. If it's not a blood rivalry, and the lack of physicality and fighting and violence has sort of made us reconsider what a rivalry should be. It is a thing where, like you said, you talk about Matthews and McDavid. I mean, obviously being in two different conferences doesn't help. A lot of the stars are kind of spread out. I mean, one of the benefits of Obi and Sid was not only did their teams already have a rivalry going back to the Mario days, but they were also in the same division. They were meeting in the playoffs, you know, with frequency. And that only like exacerbated the personal rivalry. So there's a lot of factors that go into it, but I completely agree with you. I think for all the great things that are happening in the NHL with the skill, with the young stars.
That we definitely heard at that time. We definitely got it that time.
I don't know. Maybe NHL media is like, don't talk about the lack of rivalries here.
We're just
don't
about
talk
to get
about
to that
it.
Question about diminishing TV numbers, maybe.
Somebody cut the cord there.
In the United States.
So double entendre. Didn't even mean it that way.
There you go. It's crazy because I always make this reference point with Jamie Benn 8 years ago. What an Art Ross season looked like 8 years ago. It was 87 points. And where we are now, where we can't count the number of like elite players that are going to soar beyond that number, right? It's in short order.
Yep.
This league got immensely more talented, and yet there is, I don't even want to say declining interest. I think people are viewing and consuming the NHL in different ways, but there isn't that regular season intrigue. Like, what's the best storyline? What's the best point of intrigue over the last couple of months of the season league-wide? Like, are the Oilers going to make the playoffs? Yeah, they're probably going to.
Yeah.
They're probably going to.
You know what the problem
is? It would be bad if they didn't, and people will be watching it if they struggle, but they're not going to struggle. They're going to be all right.
The problem is that, and just you saying it, I'm sure other people have come to this realization as well, is that, unfortunately, the NHL is being consumed a lot like Major League Baseball, where you consume everything about your team.
Yeah.
And if there's a couple big bad boys in the division, like I imagine if you're a Sens fan, you just sit here and you think like a Jays fan did in the early 2000s of, okay, yeah, the Yankees and the Red Sox are just going to go through it again. And that's kind of the problem you're having, is that just so many things are set in stone already. We now welcome back in Greg Wyshynski again. We're just saying the league didn't like you talking about the lack of marquee rivalries. And they're like, you know what? Get them off there. We don't need this this bad press. But, you know, when you look at it, it does feel like there have been areas where you could have a great rivalry. Like the Leafs and Lightning, in theory, should be this great rivalry, but there isn't the animosity. It's just a team they play every year. And it sometimes seems like when you try to force these things to happen, it can't. They have to come about organically. Like, who would have thought Red Wings and Avalanche would have been the rivalry it was? Well, Claude Lemieux would have thought. And that's what happens. Sometimes
right.
You need that spark moment. And it feels like we're all just kind of sitting around waiting for one to happen. It's how it feels like sometimes.
Right, but I mean, again, like, part of that is also inherent nastiness. I mean, the nastiness in that is legendary. I mean, my God, we made like a 30 for 30 about it.
It was so
nasty. and then like, you know, the last maybe really significant rivalry we had, I, in my opinion, might have been San Jose and Vegas. Those two teams really hated each other. And I think a lot of that also was born from physicality. What happened to Pavelski, for example. So, you know, I think, like I said earlier, it's just that our hockey brains are tuned to look at a rivalry a certain way. It's got to smell and taste a certain way, and hockey's different now. Like it's a faster, cleaner, less physical sport, and you know the intensity of those rivalries could easily just still exist. It's just that we have to kind of learn how to reprocess what they look like, maybe, if that makes sense. So.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think that we are, you know, sort of programmed to think, oh, these aren't as intense as they were 10 years ago. And maybe that's the case and maybe not. But yeah, I mean, the bottom line for me is that rivalries used to be the easiest thing in this league to sell. But now I think it's kind of difficult to even find one that you can sell.
So I got to ask you about the tweet, Greg, which may or may not be lacking context, but a report that 22% decline on viewership south of the border for the NHL. You can answer this as an ESPN employee or just a general NHL fan who's at the All-Star game. But how concerning is this, and how much has it like consumed all of the novelty item in Florida All-Star game discussion happening amongst hockey people at the All-Star game?
Well, I can't really get into it. It's kind of an above my pay grade type conversation, but I will say that the reporting done in Sports Business Journal and also from my friend Sean Gentile at The Athletic, I think really kind of captured the essence of what's going on, which is that a lot of it is scheduling. Like there are more games this year on the air, and some of those games are going up against the NFL here in the States. So if you kind of dig a little bit deeper than the tweet, there are factors at play for why this is happening. But from an interest level, I don't think it's really in sync with anything that's been reported ratings wise. Like every other metric is up, and clearly the NHL is on an upswing when it comes to attendance, when it comes to sales of merchandise and things of that nature. I think that they're in a good place right now.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like about it. And like you said, anytime you could be just about any entity in the world and you go up against the NFL, you're going to lose. Like we've all seen the graphic of the most 100 watched broadcasts in the States, and it's like 97 football games and 3 election nights pretty much. So we all know what it is there. You know, in terms of interest, how much we talk about the rivalries there. And obviously this is something a lot of people, especially here, have been opining for. But the idea of some flexibility with the cap, be it a soft cap, be it a luxury tax, I don't know, you can even go real crazy and have like a designated player system. You can play it, pay one or two guys, whatever you want. How much do you think the idea of some alleviation of the hard cap and actual player movement being able to happen, like the Bo Horvat trade, man, what a breath of fresh air, not talking about it, actually seeing it, he's playing on a different team now, and it just feels like those deals are so impossible to make right now. How much do you think that is affecting interest potentially? Because we all talk about the trades, we're all excited about them, but it feels like more times than not, they don't come to fruition. You know, we'd love Erik Karlsson to get moved. Maybe the Sharks wouldn't, but I think everyone in the league would love to see him play a game that matters, you know, past the deadline this year, but it's almost certainly not going to happen because of the cap and his term and all of those things.
Well, I think that's been a problem for years. I mean, you know, it's a combination of the free agency rules, you know, keeping players with their teams until they're like 27 or 28. You know, that affects the hot stove league kind of conversation because they're not going anywhere. Like we never see offer sheets. And then the cap really, you know, messes with your ability to get really nerdy about trade proposals. I mean, you know, it's no fun to throw something out there and being like, you know, what if the Rangers got Bo Horvat? And then immediately somebody goes to cap friendly and like, it's impossible. And so like, it doesn't help. I mean, it's not a positive thing to increase the conjecture in the conversation about your sport when, you know, everyone has to basically be an MIT, you know, engineer to figure out if trades are even possible with regard to the cap. So yeah, it's a bummer. And again, like it's a function of the salary cap really kind of restricting it to what is it like 20 guys at the most that might be on the move every year. If that, and that really, it doesn't really make for a lot of exciting fan conversation.
It wouldn't be an All-Star weekend without an awkward media appearance. I think there's a couple candidates. Bo Horvat would be probably an interesting one. I think the Erik Karlsson, despite him being very, very good in front of a microphone, probably interesting as well. You caught up with Dylan Larkin. That one probably has a little spice or had a little spice to it. What media appearance, what like player, it, you know, sticks out when, okay, you guys are circling and you want to hear from this player because there's actually something with substance that could come out from it.
Yeah, the Bo one was pretty well attended yesterday at the media day. Like, you know, the idea that he is going to be making his debut as an Islander wearing the Fish Sticks jersey at the All-Star game and will be announced as representing the Pacific Division but a member of the New York Islanders. It's very confusing. And yeah, you know, everybody got a chance to kind of, like, ask him about his thoughts on the trade a few days afterwards and stuff. But the Larkin thing yesterday was just interesting because you could tell that he's getting a little frustrated by this process being public. You know, the Detroit Free Press reported on some numbers that Steve Yzerman had tabled for Larkin and, you know, kind of put forth the idea of what the Larkin camp might be looking for. He was pretty adamant in saying that there's been some, you know, lack of truth in some of the reports that have come out about him and his contract. I'm still pretty confident he's going to be a Red Wing. He said himself yesterday to me that he wants to be a Red Wing, but it's one of those deals where when you get a kid that is super talented, captain of his team, and has never been in this position before, pending unrestricted free agent and all of a sudden having your contract laundry aired out in public, you could tell it's a different world for him a little bit, and he's still kind of getting used to that. This whole notion of the speculation and everything is part of what comes with this now.
I guess related, Greg, do you think a little of the Yzerman shine is wearing off? Trying to put a foot in the ground and have some progress this season with all the free agent additions. It hasn't worked. I think he miscalculated on Nedeljkovic. I feel like, you know, the sorcery he was working with previously may not be repeatable here.
I think that's going to be judged by how their draft acquisitions work out, because that's honestly like his calling card in Tampa wasn't, you know, necessarily acquisition of outside talent. It was building this insane collection of players to augment what was already there in Stamkos and Hedman. I mean, you know, think about like Palat and Kucherov and Vasilevsky and all those guys that really formed the core of that team. So I think Yzerman will ultimately be judged by how some of the prospects that were drafted under his watch pan out. The disappointment this year, though, and I think you're right, I think the Red Wings have kind of gotten a pass a little bit insofar as like being one of the most disappointing teams. I mean, we always talk about like Vancouver, for example, or the Islanders, and the Red Wings aren't usually in that because they weren't expected to be a real cup contender, but they were expected to be relevant, and I think they're not. And that's probably the biggest problem for Yzerman right now, is that the acquisition of Perron and Husso and Sherratt and all those guys, it was to push them close to the bubble. It was to give them that experience. It was to allow Mo Seider and Raymond and all these young guys to get a taste of what that's like. And they're not even in that position right now, despite all that free agent spending. So that's got to be a real bummer for Yzerman, and really positions the Red Wings as one of the bigger disappointments in the league this year.
Greg, enjoy the festivities tonight and over the weekend. We appreciate you grinding through a couple phone issues. But we appreciate it. And enjoy the weekend and all the best moving forward throughout the rest of the NHL season.
Sunscreen.
Thank you
sunscreen,
so much. Yeah,
sunscreen.
Sorry about all the... I know, God, right? Like, I'm just going to stay indoors, I think, all day. I can't wait to get to the arena where I can go back to being a creature of the night.
The rink is cold. The rink is cold.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Greg. That was Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN. Quickly, before we get to the break, we got to give away some tickets. Luke Bryan is coming to Bud's Stage this summer on June 17th, and we've been giving away tickets all week long. Today is your final chance to score a pair of tickets to the show, and all you need to do is text our daily code word to 590-590 in order to enter. Today's code word is three words, crash my party. Text crash my party to 590-590 right now for your chance to win. If you don't win with us, make sure to visit Ticketmaster.ca to secure your tickets for Luke Bryan's June 17th show. They officially go on sale today at 10 a.m., so about 90 minutes from now, Luke Bryan at Bud Stage, June 17th. The Wake and Rake is next, your last chance to get in, your picks for tonight's action, Rockets and Raptors, a full slate of NBA. Maybe you want to bet on the NHL Skills Competition. Two events are already in the bag, a couple to come
tonight.
Go
ask some guy in Florida if you want to get a bet in. Apparently they know.
That was a big controversy last year when it was in Vegas.
That's
people
right.
knew... And I forget who won the blackjack thing, but people knew and were trying to get bets down and they were voided and there was a big thing. But anyway, I mean, they should be voided. Like, how much are you going to complain about that? Anyway, Wake and Rake next. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's The Fan Morning Show with Justin and Brent.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
Justin and Brent today on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Texters get a little upset.
No need to apologize.
No, it's okay. Like, look, they're not upset that I'm here. They're just sad that Ailish isn't, and that's okay. That's perfectly fine.
It happens. I mean, yeah, it happens. And
let me tell you, when I'm
not about you, we'll just
say that. I was going to say, when I'm filling in for you, people don't seem to think it's such a downgrade. That's all I got to say, okay?
Well, I guess that's a slight against me. Either way.
Hey, we're both here. Okay.
Either way, we're just trying to appease the masses, and Ailish will be back.
There you go.
On Monday. But tonight, the NHL All-Star Skills Competition, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet. We got the full list of participants. There are a couple of competitions already completed. Greg did not, Wyshynski did not tell us who won the pitch and puck.
Because he's a bad friend.
Or the splash shot, I believe it's called, where you're dunking opponents into tanks.
Still,
Sidney Crosby is apparently in that. I don't know if he went in the water. We didn't get any of that information. But, you know, apparently the two events went well.
Still, the funniest part of this is the umpteenth times I have heard Jeff Merrick refer to hamburgers as frozen meat pucks for one of these events. It's like, yeah, it's just called a burger, Jeff. So that has been
my favorite part of the build up to this.
I think it's an important distinction because I'd eat a hamburger, whatever was intended for the alligators, though. Don't think I'd be into.
I don't know. I feel like they're eating good in Florida.
You think so?
I don't know. I feel like an alligator has equal rights to me in Florida at the very least.
Either way, the marquee events at the skills competition, at least in my opinion, fastest skater and hardest shot.
Agreed.
We do have lines for that.
Okay.
I think you could find lines for other things as well. Was a little controversy, as we mentioned on the other side of the break last year. Maybe they're trying to avoid that. But right now, fastest skater, the field is set with Dylan Larkin being the favorite, plus 260. Cale Makar, plus 300. Chandler Stephenson. Chandler Stephenson, All-Stars. Like, I know, great season. That's probably the one that's, when you're a William Nylander fan, that's the one that bothers you the most.
No, this is what bothers me the most, is that because my brain is so broken and warped, you know where I go to? He was the third number one center that the Canadians didn't have to play on their route to a Stanley Cup final after Mark Scheifele ejected himself from their series and Corey Perry ejected John Tavares. And then they're like, also, the Golden Knights, their number one center is apparently some guy named Chandler Stephenson, and he can't play either. Even he can't play. So that is where my mind goes to the deep, dark recesses of the bubble.
Yes, the bubble. The bubble. In the North Division season, there will always be torment and nightmares born from those years.
Good for him, though.
Kaprizov, fourth in the field, plus 450. And Andrei Svechnikov, plus 550. Pretty even. I think Dylan Larkin's won this before. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, I think he dueled
Connor
McDavid. So plus 260s is not terrible on Dylan Larkin. Chandler Stephenson can move. Kaprizov can move, too. And Svechnikov, I think, is probably the one I least likely to pick out of those three, but Dylan Larkin plus 260 is kind of calling my name.
So the thing you have to think about with this, and us not knowing these guys, this makes it a fun exercise, is one, who's going to have the most fun at the All-Star game? Because maybe you don't want that guy to be somebody you're picking.
True.
And I don't know, Dylan Larkin, he just looks like he's just a guy who drinks a nice glass of milk with Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. I could see him behaving himself. Also, we just talked to Wish. Not that this is going to matter, but it's like, you know, this is a guy in a prove me season. He's heading into free agency potentially. You want to have this moment, and he's done it before. Yes, Larkin. Yes.
Cale Makar, definitely probably having a glass of milk. However, I think he's kind of like bashful. When the helmet's on and it's a game, he can be full Cale Makar.
Yeah.
But when like helmet off, rosy cheeks, all the attention on the world on you, I don't know if he really will be dying to cross the finish line first. And of course, he's probably I don't know if it's not straight line speed, but I don't know if that's what makes Cale Makar as fast as he normally is. So I think if you're looking at that, Larkin, maybe Kaprizov 450.
Okay.
I don't know if Chandler might be enjoying himself because this might be the first and only time
for one
Chandler Stephenson.
He's like a caller. First time, long time. Yeah.
Yeah. The other one, hardest shot. I think that's normally like the last event. It feels like it's the night,
closer.
The night reaches its crescendo with the hardest shot competition. The field is set with Ovechkin, Seth Jones. Oh, God.
Got to give him something to do.
Seth Jones, Rasmus Dahlin, Josh Morrissey. Those four are all between, and all five. Elias Pettersson, 450. Ovechkin's the shortest odds at 300. Pettersson and Dahlin at 450. If I had to go anywhere, I'd go value at Dahlin 450. But you were mentioning there isn't that like imposing figure in the hardest shot.
What happened to a defenseman who's 6'6 and could just lean on it? Like where I know
like,
Jones is
6'6.
Well,
I think, but can he lean on it?
I know he's hurt, but it's like this. Like when I close my eyes, this is the event Aaron Ekblad's supposed to be really good at. Victor Hedman, he has done this event in the past. Who was the guy forever? It was the gentle giant until he doesn't want to be anymore. Zdeno Chara, he was always good at this. But if the NHL is going to go full gimmick and lead into this, and, you know, this is a little mean, but he's not going to hear it, so I'll say it. And this guy's already got some of these features going for him and his lack of hair. Alex Ovechkin needs to throw on the old Ally Afraidy jersey, and I don't care if he gets a skullet wig. I don't care if he just shaves his head. That's obviously not going to happen because he's too prideful, and I don't blame him. I wouldn't want to be cruising around with that look in the streets in 2023 either. But Ally Afraidy throwback jersey, skullet, wig of some kind on Ovechkin. That's what you got to do. But I wouldn't be betting him in this event at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've entered full degen mode if you are betting on these things. However, I think it's worse to bet on the actual All-Star game and tournament, the 3-on-3 competition that will happen, I believe, Saturday. Right now,
that's Atlantic, unhinged.
The Atlantic is plus 225 to okay. win it out. The Pacific with Connor McDavid. The longest odds at 325. I mean, if you're going to do anything, at least take the longest odds because it doesn't matter.
There's no point.
Yeah. It's about who's having the most fun, who cares, and if you are going with the team with the best player, that's easily Connor McDavid, and he will, last I checked, represent the Pacific Division.
Yes, I can confirm that. In theory, somebody would say, oh, but what if a goalie is going to... Look, they're not going to, okay? These guys are not risking injury. None of them are, but a goalie is definitely not risking injury in 3-on-3. Also, with the idea of like player preservation, I can't believe we send NHL goalies to this thing to just have their groins ripped to shreds seemingly on 2-on-1s and 3-on-0s left, right, and center. I'm thrilled they do it, and I understand how weird it would be if it's just like, here's Scott Darling Scott Foster, the old accounting goalie from Chicago, and David Ayers or whoever. But the idea that we just sick NHL goalies like this, have fun. Please don't get hurt because your team season will be over if you did.
Listen, at least in the Atlantic Division, they pretty much just neglected all defensemen.
I would
be okay if they neglected goaltenders because they can't really add much.
Just have them go like the old like three posts. It's like, yeah, just shooting for crossbars today, boys.
If you just put like a replacement level at like a goalie who can play, who just wears like all white or all black, like is just like an anonymous like robot.
I like this.
Then you get like, I mean, I think you'd be... Part of it might be, hey, we don't even want to embarrass these guys. And we're like, they're not warm and they were out drinking the night before. Like, do we really need to, as you put it, tear apart their hamstrings and groins? Like, it's not really necessary. So there's a couple things that could be added to the All-Star game to help improve it. And maybe fewer goaltenders could do that. Quickly, where does the NHL All-Star game rank amongst the four North American All-Star weekends? How would you rank them 1 to 4?
When it was a game and not this 3-on-3 junk, okay, because I'm 75 years old apparently, I had it second behind the NBA All-Star game. That is still the crown jewel because they can do whatever they want until the last 5 minutes. Well, I know they have the Elam ending now, which is great, but until it's crunch time and then it's a real basketball game and guys are checking each other up, like it's great. It is exactly what you hope an All-Star game is. When the NHL had just teams and it wasn't 3-on-3 and it was conference or Team North America versus World or however you want to do it, I liked that one second because you would still have moments where you would have guys trying or breaking up a 2-on-1 or, oh, look at this, two guys you'll never see on a 2-on-1 together, those kinds of things. Then I like MLB because the idea of, and this is a purely aesthetic, when they wore their own team's jerseys, absolutely love the way that looked out there. It's the closest to a real game in that you can have a pitcher and batter kind of really dueling out there. And then obviously they don't even do the Pro Bowl anymore, so it's last.
Yeah, Pro Bowl is last. I don't think I've ever, the most content for the Pro Bowl I've ever consumed might have been last night while I was prepping for the show and it was just on in the background. Honestly,
mine is RIP Bills legend Brian Moorman when Sean Taylor almost killed him in the game. That's lit. That's it though. That's all we've got.
It is the greatest moment in Pro Bowl history, but I have to admit I did not watch it live.
Of course
not. I've never been into it ever. It's always like, this is the weekend to get away from the Pro Bowl, get away from football for one weekend, recharge the battery. It's last. I think the All-Star game in the NHL is third last, okay, unfortunately. I do like elements of it. I will watch the skills competition. There are things that I like. I put the MLB All-Star game number one.
Okay.
It's closest to an actual game. You can see the full skills on display. It also comes at a great time because it's like, okay, watching a lot of Blue Jays baseball. What else is going on? Yeah. Like a couple stories. Like I get into that. I can watch that night. And the NBA All-Star game is always pretty good. Like it's pretty close. I think like there's a lot of entertainment factors that play into it, whether it's just people getting excited being there, other things that are happening, celebrities. I just think it's more of a viewing experience. But the NHL All-Star game has, I guess, room to improve.
And the one thing the NBA All-Star game has going for it as well is that at the end, you do get this kind of sussing out of the pecking order. Like, who gets the ball? There's going to be one guy on each team who gets the ball
and
in their hand.
It means something.
It does, exactly.
We just talked about Chandler Stephenson and Seth Jones. Like, they're not... Chandler Stephens having a great year. Seth Jones not an All-Star. Like, it's not happening. And that does not happen with the NBA.
Nope.
If you get there, you deserve it. And I think you take it more seriously
because
it does actually matter. And it's the thing that, like, you'll be remembered. You go, it's a real distinction to be an NBA player and to make the All-Star game. And that's why it still matters. Let's go through quickly the anchor selections before we complete the parlay. We got about, I got about six here, I think. Maybe five. A light day, of course, with no NHL action. And the Raptors and Houston Rockets are in action. But again, we're lacking player props from the Raptors of late because there is so much influx. Mm-hmm. And we don't know, well, we kind of know who's going to be in the lineup. It won't be OG Anunoby tonight. But the Raptors, you know, anything could happen. It seems at any moment. So maybe they're being a little bit closer to the vest with their prop selections. But we'll go through the Wake and Rake anchor selections here. Good morning for today's anchor. I'm going to name... bring a name that hasn't probably been used yet. Mikal Bridges of the Phoenix Suns. Take him to go over 18.5 points. 9 of the last 10 games, he's hit that. And Ron's daughter, Juliana, will take Fred VanVleet to get a double-double today, plus 185. So if we're looking for a Raptors play, maybe it's Fred who's been filling up the stat sheet of late. Eric from Burlington says he likes the Celtics over 9.5. They just seem to be all around better than their opponent, than the Suns. They won by 27, so the spread feels pretty comfortable.
Yeah, minus 450 on the money line there, so I think you can feel comfortable about them squeaking out a win.
Definitely. He likes them over 10, though, with the with the line set at 9.5. Jagan Scarborough likes Pascal over points after the outrageous snub. He says he comes out firing, drops a 50-piece. I'm worried about Pascal. We haven't been able to rely on Pascal Siakam because he's being lined all season long where he's at least in terms of point totals, but he's struggled over the last month, whether it's the fact that he's being run into the ground a little bit by Nick Nurse or whatever it is, he's been struggling to maintain that pace. Neil from Newfoundland, couple picks in the tennis world. Nuskova was his pick yesterday, 4.5 on the spread. It's now this afternoon, so you can still grab that. And he's got Holger Rune, minus 5.5 games over Bambry. Rune is the number 9 in the world and is at a dominant year. Bambry, a lower level player right now. So if you're into the into tennis and into Neil, you can grab those two picks. And finally, Corey from Port Hope. Jokic over rebounds last night was basically a no sweat after he got 10 in the first half. Today, Corey from Port Hope likes Lauri Markkanen over 26.5 points. Anything stand out to you there?
I like the Markkanen, and I do. I was teasing, but I actually do like the Celtics. That was the one I was kind of circling. That just 9.5. I know it's a big line in the NBA. Feels like it could be 12 or 13, and you'd still feel kind of confident about it. So that is the one I like the most. Markkanen as well just feels like a perfect kind of matchup for him. And God, he's been so good this year. So you feel good throwing him in there. In terms of rap stuff, you're right. Like, especially when you look at points, it's like, do you really like Scotty Barnes to go over 20 points? I don't there. It's like you're still paying a vig if you want to do that for Trent or VanVleet or Pascal. Obviously, you're going to have to pay a lot to get him around that number. So you're right. The Raptors, especially the point props, really, really tough there. So the two that stood out to me, I like Markkanen and I like the Celtics there.
Let's put the Celtics in just because, you know, better time zone for us. We can maybe tune into that one more often than we'll tune into the Jazz and Hawks who are in the nightcap tonight in the NBA. I'm going to keep it simple. Maybe in honor of Ailish Forfar, who likes to light the beam. I like the Sacramento Kings minus 2.5 on the road in Indiana tonight. Indiana played last night, lost a heartbreaker to LeBron James and the LA Lakers. Pretty hard-fought game. We're looking towards... We're not at the other All-Star games are in play right now. So the NBA churns along, but back-to-back for the Pacers, short spread game, Domantas Sabonis going back to Indiana. They played each other a bunch of times. Haliburton just named to the All-Star game. So maybe he has a big game. Maybe he doesn't, but I think Sabonis will want to make a statement and the rested Kings get a win and cover over the Indiana Pacers.
I like that as well. That was one I was looking at. For me, let's just go straight up money line. We mentioned Markkanen and we like him. Let's like his team. Just money line for the Jazz. They're minus
one. Oh, we do have to stay out there.
They're minus yeah, we're going to stay out there anyways. Minus 125, take them against the Hawks. That's who I like there.
Okay, so the Wake and Rake is the Utah Jazz money line, the Celtics 9.5 on the spread to blowout, the Suns at home, and the Sacramento Kings to win on the road in Indiana by 3 or more. All that is plus 55 where I'm seeing it.
And quickly, stay safe out there if you're doing any golf betting. The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, they're playing on different courses. There's celebs in the mix. It is as tough a week to prognosticate. So I love a golf bet, but you might want to stay away from that one this weekend.
Okay, one thing you're looking forward to the weekend. We got the Pro Bowl. We got the NHL All-Star Game. We got the Raptors concluding their Western Conference road trip. I believe they end off in Memphis. Is there anything that stands out to you heading into the weekend?
Yeah, I do like the NHL skills contest. It can get a little redundant at times, but it feels like it's gone away. They freshened it up a little. I love the accuracy shooting too. Hardest shot, fastest skater. It's old school. It's great background watching. That's what I'm most fired up for this weekend, and to watch some golf, let's be honest.
I think, honestly, the big thing, the thing for this weekend is, what are Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin planning? Like, it sounds ridiculous. It's probably going to be dumb, but if Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin are advertising that they are collaborating on something together at an NHL All-Star weekend, I kind of want to see what they're cooking up.
Can't wait to see it, honestly.
So we got,
it's going to be hokey and it's going to be cheesy, but it will bring a tear to my eye.
And we'll make fun of it, and it'll be great. So Ovi and Sid at the All-Star game in Florida. We got the Pro Bowl as well. I believe that's in Vegas. A lot of All-Star things. And an All-Star fill-in today with Brent Gunning.
Thank you.
It's been the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Brent. We'll talk to you on Monday.